and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the testimony today by Attorney General Sessions before the House Judiciary Committee that was full of memory lapses when it came to discussions about the Trump campaign reaching out to the Russians and Putin himself. Lisa Graves, who served as a Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department and as Chief Counsel for Nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, joins us to discuss how Sessions denied that he lied to the Senate in October about contacts with Russians. But his memory suddenly got better when he recalled shooting down a proposal for a Trump-Putin meeting. We'll also examine Trump's picks for the federal judiciary, which he is rapidly filling with far-right bloggers, and assess whether the Republicans will stick with the party line and all vote for a candidate who has never tried a case and is deemed not qualified by the American Bar Association. Furthermore, this 37-year-old Hillary hater failed to disclose that his wife is the chief of staff for the White House counsel, Donald McCann, who, along with Leonard Leo of the Federalist Society, control the pipeline for lifetime appointments to the federal bench. Then we'll discuss today's hearings before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on the authority to order the use of nuclear weapons, which has been prompted by bipartisan concerns that Donald Trump does not have the stability and competence to be a steward of America's nuclear arsenal and is so volatile and quixotic that he could wake up on the wrong side of the bed and order a nuclear strike. John Wolfthal, who served as a special assistant to President Obama on the National Security Council for Arms Control and Nonproliferation, joins us to analyze what barriers could be placed between Trump and the nuclear button without diminishing the deterrence value of the U.S. nuclear arsenal. Then finally, we will look into the revelations in The Atlantic of secret correspondence between Donald Trump Jr. and WikiLeaks that uncover Julian Assange's close cooperation with the Trump campaign to disseminate damaging information on Hillary Clinton from Russian hacks and show how much Assange was offering advice and guidance to Trump, who he was unctuously endorsing. Michael Kelly, an editor and investigative reporter at Yahoo, who previously was a senior news editor at Business Insider, joins us to assess how leftist supporters of Assange can reconcile their hero's bromance with Donald Trump and his hard right-wing presidency. And joining us now is Lisa Graves, who served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government, as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, as Chief Counsel for Nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as a Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lisa Graves.
Thank you so much, Ian. It's good to be here.
Well, thank you, Lisa. And what did you make of Jeff Sessions' bouts of amnesia today in testimony on the Hill? He did basically forget an awful lot. And I guess the one takeaway was, in terms of what's happening in Alabama with the Roy Moore scandal, he did say that he has no reason to doubt these women. A lot of the Republicans seem to be absolutely obsessed with this Uranium One story, which is, I have no idea what they're talking about, but they want to have hearings on that. But in general, he just seems to parry everybody. And I guess is he playing dumb? How would you describe it?
A little bit like a possum, I suppose. He's trying to play. I think he's trying to play this game where he says he doesn't remember anything that's germane, and in essence to suggest that he did not perjure himself and didn't lie. But more and more evidence has come about since he initially testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee that in fact he was informed of contacts between the campaign. The campaign team and Russia on more than one occasion. He claims he doesn't remember. And in this instance, he basically tried to say he didn't remember, but if he did, he stands by the idea that he rejected that suggestion from George Papadopoulos. And so, you know, I think he's in a bit of a bind. He's someone who, as Congressman Jeffries said during the hearing today, Sessions is someone who strongly supported the impeachment of Bill Clinton in part for perjury, waxed rhetorically on the Senate floor about how he prosecuted a police officer for perjury because no person should be above the law and no person should be set to a different standard on perjury. And yet here you have the Attorney General of the United States who has maintained, I think unconvincingly, that he has no recollection of contacts with the Russians, that he didn't have meetings with the Russians while he was serving a dual role as a senator and as a campaign surrogate. And yet it turns out he had more than one meeting himself with the Russian ambassador, and he also was in meetings where discussions of having campaign members go to Russia, talk with the Russians, were also discussed. And so he comes off to me as someone who is certainly not truthful and not being truthful.
Well, let's turn to the real lasting horrors. I don't know how much longer. Obviously, Trump would like to get Sessions out of there and maybe try and save that situation down in Alabama. I don't think Sessions wants to leave the Attorney General job. He likes it. He doesn't want to go back to being the senator from Alabama to rescue the Republicans from Steve Bannon's choice of Roy Moore. But in the broader sense, the people that they're pushing through in the judiciary, as dysfunctional as Trump's presidency has proven to be, the one area where they are showing tremendous speed and skill, and that is filling the federal judiciary with arch-conservative judges. And some of the judges that have gotten through so far are just so shocking. For example, this fellow, John Bush, he's now a lifetime appellate judge. He blogged under a pseudonym of G. Morris and promoted birtherism conspiracies, reposted threats to shoot Barack Obama's supporters, lied to the Senate, and yet got confirmed on a party line vote. And then this fellow Damian Schiff, another right-wing blogger, he believes that Medicare, Social Security are unconstitutional. He called Justice Anthony Kennedy a judicial prostitute. He's poised to be confirmed. But the one that's getting attention is this guy, Brett Talley, who could be on a lifetime appointment to the federal judiciary at any moment. He's been deemed not qualified by the American Bar Association. Now it turns out that his wife works for the White House counsel. Ann McDonald is the chief of staff to the White House counsel, Don McGahn, who is basically, you know, filling the judiciary. He's the sort of right there in the pipeline, if not the main player, along with Leonard Leo of the Federalist Society. So this guy has never... He's only been a lawyer, what, about three years,
right.
never tried a case. And it turns out not only is a crazy right-wing blogger, he also is a part of the Tuscaloosa Paranormal Research Group, and has a cult following, and he's written books titled Haunted Tuscaloosa, Haunted Alabama Black Belt, and The Reborn. Hmm. All of these, you know, he's like a discount version, if you will, of Stephen King. So, I mean,
I think you may be praising him. You may be praising him too much, even with the discount version there.
Right. Well, but it's just like, where would you find people like this? Let alone, surely the entire judiciary, including the Chief Justice and the people on the Supreme Court, they've got to be thinking that their whole profession is being slimed by these unqualified lunatics.
It's shocking, quite frankly, the type of people that the Trump team has put forward for the judiciary. And it's also shocking that the Republicans in charge of the Senate have not blinked an eye in confirming these number of people who are plainly unfit to be judges, to be lifetime judges on our federal courts. It shows how empty the rhetoric they've had over these many years of supposed opposition to judicial activism, supposed commitment the rule of law. This shows how committed they actually are to just naked power and to trying to use our court system to enact their most extreme vision of America through these judges. And it's appalling, quite frankly, that the Senate would even be considering confirming someone who has practiced law for, you know, only about 3 years and not even really practiced law in the sense of as a trial lawyer or even an appellate lawyer to be given a position as a judge. I wouldn't appoint him, you know, a mediator, let alone a county judge, let alone a state court, you know, judge, a Supreme Court judge for a state, let alone federal judge. This guy has no business being a judge anywhere. He doesn't have the temperament to be a judge. His entire limited record that he has shows that he does not have the impartiality or fairness necessary for being entrusted with making impartial rulings that affect the lives of the people who come before him. In fact, his record demonstrates that he is the opposite of that, that he's someone who has an extremely right-wing ideological point of view, that he has a penchant for extraordinary rhetoric, that he, you know, is someone who is simply not suitable, not qualified, not experienced enough to be a federal judge. And he's just the tip of the iceberg, as you point out. There's a whole slate of these people that these Republicans, that the White House has chosen hand in glove with the Federal Society and with other right-wing extremist sorts of advocates to put on our federal court system. It demeans our federal judiciary. It weakens the public respect for our federal courts. And I think ultimately it will lead to a number of really outlandish and outrageous decisions being pushed by these people who are not should not be entrusted with such a position of enormous trust in our federal court system, in our system of our checks and balances in our federal government.
And again, I'm speaking with Lisa Graves, who served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government, as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, as Chief Counsel for nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as a Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts. So what's the understanding amongst the judiciary and the legal profession in general? I thought the American Bar Association was largely taken seriously when they recommend or assess nominees for the federal bench. And rarely do they say that a nominee is not qualified, as they have in the case of Brett Talley. Again, I go back to the Chief Justice and others who talk about the majesty of the law and all of that stuff that they go on about during their confirmations, you know, almost sort of like Vatican talk, you know, when they're going through confirmation. And yet you've got somebody that's an absolute joke and a disgrace. So where does the ABA stand in terms of its gravitas, and why aren't they taking it seriously?
Well, I think, I think what happened, what happened actually almost two decades ago was that George W. Bush, at the advice of the right wing and at the behest, in essence, of the Federal Society and more, kicked the American Bar Association out of the process before nomination. And so it used to be in the Clinton administration when I worked on judicial nominations that you would await before nomination an advisory view from the American Bar Association, which represents, which is the association for the lawyers in the country and has a committee with lawyers who are esteemed in the field, who conduct interviews about whether a person who is being suggested for a judgeship has the temperament and experience for that role. And then if the ABA were to give a recommendation that the person would not be qualified, then the Clinton administration might not go forward with that nomination. In fact, you know, would likely seek another candidate. What happened with Bush was he pushed the ABA's process to after the nomination occurs. And now with this Congress, they're not even waiting for the ABA's rating before they hold hearings on these guys. So the Senate Judiciary Committee, the Republicans leading the Senate, have basically indicated that they don't care for the views of the actual profession that includes numerous lawyers and also, you know, judges who've been part of the ABA. And in this instance, you have a vote across the board by every single member of that ABA standing committee against the qualifications of Mr. Talley. And it's no wonder. I mean, it's not a shock that it's unanimous that he's unqualified, because if there were a standard below unqualified, he would earn it. He is so far removed from whatever would be the baseline qualifications. He couldn't make partner at a law firm, let alone a lifetime appointment to a judgeship, if there were any justice or fairness in the world. And so I think that it's a sad day for America that the right wing has taken hold of our United States Senate and is acting in derogation of their responsibilities to give advice and consent to actually meaningfully advise on whether someone is fit and suitable to have this lifetime position, a position in which this guy could be on the court for the next 40, 50, or even 60 years if he lived to a ripe old age. long after Trump is gone, and wreak all sorts of havoc on people's lives. And so it's a terrible miscarriage of justice. It's a miscarriage of the responsibilities of the Senate to proceed in this way and to ignore the advice, and in fact not even listen to the advice of the profession about this man's qualifications and some of the other nominees who have been put forward by Trump and have been moved by that Senate.
Well, it's you wonder what's in the water down there in Alabama with this guy Talley from Alabama and of course Roy Moore, but there's a cronyism that we've never seen before in the Trump administration. And nepotism just a breathtaking scale. You got the son-in-law, Jared Kushner, as an emissary of the White House, running around the Middle East, shaking down potentates to bail him out from a bad investment he made when he was courting Ivanka and bought the most expensive piece of real estate in Manhattan just before the 2008 crash. It's got a $1.2 billion balloon payment due at the end of next year, and he's shaking down the Qatari royals for $500 million and then threatening the blockade, which they told him to go get lost, and sure enough, the blockade happens. So we've never seen that. We've never seen a national security advisor, albeit a very brief tenure that Michael Flynn had, but in that tenure, he worked for the government of Turkey. He actually did their bidding over the United States and held back on the Kurds taking Raqqa and delayed that offensive by months at the behest of Erdogan, who was going to pay him $15 million. So those are breathtaking just in themselves. But it feels as though there's trickle-down nepotism here with Don McCann, the White House counsel, having his chief of staff, Ann Donaldson, nominate her husband, Brett Talley, who's completely unqualified.
I mean, it's astonishing that he also failed to disclose that fact to the Senate Judiciary Committee, that his wife was working in the White House counsel's office for the person who has the penultimate say to recommend to the president who gets nominated. And that's astonishing. But as you point out, that's just one more astonishing fact after another of the incredible level of incompetence and mendaciousness and greed, quite frankly, of a whole host of people put into positions of power by Trump or his inside team. And, you know, that article about Jared Kushner's business history, his so-called business experience that was in Vanity Fair, I think, this past month, was incredible. It was so important to see because he has virtually no experience running anything successfully, and yet because he, I suppose, reminds Trump of himself as a young man who was, you know, did not have much experience but had a lot of money. He has now been put in charge of all sorts of substantive public policy that affects people's lives, and matters of life and death are in the hands of Jared Kushner, who failed at the two major business enterprises that he ever undertook in his brief experience. And yet, because he is the son-in-law of Trump, he has been given this role that he's not qualified for, and that he, you know, it appears, as you point out, that he has ulterior motives for his own personal financial circumstances in pushing things a certain way. I think you're right. This is unprecedented. It's certainly in the modern era of American democracy for there to be this level of corruption, this level of nepotism, this level of incompetence. We've just never seen anything like this. This makes the Bush administration, George W. Bush administration, look like it was almost an A student, and clearly it was not.
Well, just in closing, though, it does seem that there's a general disrespect for the law. We know Trump has no respect for the law, and he uses the law proactively to punish anybody that would complain that they got ripped off by him, etc. So his attitude to the law is pretty clear. But I don't understand how, and most of the Congress are lawyers, so most of those Republicans are lawyers, and what's going on in their head where they're making excuses, and they're going to, people down in Alabama are going to vote for a pedophile to be in the United States Senate. I mean, the guy's an absolute disgrace, and he should be in jail, I mean, let alone in the U.S. Senate. But they're making excuses for him, and now they're voting like a bunch of sheep for these manifestly unqualified people. What is going on with these Republican lawyers in our Congress.
I can't believe what's happening in terms of Alabama and Roy Moore. You know, you have four women, some of whom are Republicans. I guess now five women. One or more of them voted for Trump. They didn't know each other. They come forward. They allege really outrageous behavior by Roy Moore as a district attorney, trolling high school girls, and according to the witness yesterday, sexually assaulting her, almost completing the act of raping her. And yet Republicans in some Republicans, and certainly Republican leaders, if you could use that word, I use it only formally, leaders in Alabama are standing by Roy Moore despite the evidence against him. And you have a number of senators, although some have walked back their support for him, but you still have a number of senators who have not called for him to step down, step away from that election. And the fact that this is even a question for the GOP just shows how far down the rabbit hole we've come. The idea that Trump is holding his tongue but until he comes back, well, he's not holding his tongue on anything else, but he's not speaking on this issue until he supposedly gets back to the United States, that he, with his own history of numerous allegations and evidence of his own sexual harassment and predatory behavior toward women, would tell Roy Moore to step away, you know, that's a fantasy, because I don't see Donald Trump having the character to say any such thing, unless he, I suppose, thinks that he can gain personally from that. But these are standards that you never thought could be could fail. No one who's been accused of being a pedophile, who's been accused of rape by a 16-year-old girl, has any business getting votes from any person of common sense for the United States Senate. It's just appalling. It's morally abhorrent. And the idea that pastors would write in support of Roy Moore just shows how far they've fallen away from the faith that they profess to hold so dear.
Well, Lisa Graves, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much, Ian. Thanks for having me on.
And again, I've been speaking with Lisa Graves, who served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government, as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department, as Chief Counsel for nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as a Deputy Chief for the U.S. Courts. We can take a brief station break and back look into today's hearings before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on whether Trump has the stability and competence to be a steward of America's nuclear arsenal.